1029 The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian podcast is brought to you by Movie Tavern by Marcus. This new year, purchase a 2020 Ultimate Popcorn Tub. Unlimited popcorn for only $4.95 every visit for the whole year. Because movies never tasted so good.
7:50. Time to talk music news with our music expert, Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
All right. How are you today?
Good.
We're all good.
There's a long list.
Yeah, this was from the time, almost from the time we hung up last Friday to through the week. It's been an eventful week in music for sure.
Well, let's get going. Neil Peart?
Yeah. I mean, that broke, you know, interestingly, he passed away on the 7th of January, but we didn't know anything about it till last Friday when they announced it. And that's just sad. I mean, and I think, you know, the outpouring you saw there, you know, we underestimate, you know, certainly in this case, how much people love Rush. And then, you know, as an adjunct of that, how much they love Neil Peart, you know, him being the lyricist and, you know, one of the best drummers in rock. So it was, you know, that combination of shock factors in, and, you know, really, it really had been, and interestingly came on the anniversary of David Bowie's death. I don't know that we've seen that kind of outpouring since David Bowie, and we certainly had a lot in between. But it seemed like that just really, really moved the world.
When you say he's one of the best drummers in rock, did he use, I don't know anything about drumming, did he use like a certain, is there a name for the technique he used, or was he just a good drummer?
Yeah, I mean, not really. It's not so much that he had the technique. He was just very versatile. He was a very busy drummer. He was definitely a drummer from the progressive rock world and even the metal world were. So he played a lot, but he played with such precision and such accuracy and such inventiveness. I mean, just the track Xanadu alone, where I think he played like 13 different percussion instruments, you know, from conventional drum kit to woodblocks and chimes and glockenspiel and all of that. And then when you listen to it, if you ever saw them live or listen to the live albums, he could do it on stage. It wasn't just this thing he created in the studio. So just a really accomplished drummer, a lot of technique and a lot of chops, but everything fit the songs too. So it wasn't just flash for flash's sake. He really was just an accomplished drummer.
Is there a
As you might expect, Rush streams and sales were huge during the past week. Streams were up 776%, according to Nielsen. Sales were up to more than 2,000%. So, you know, death as we know sells.
Yeah, kind of young too, 67. All right.
Did he play on anybody else's albums?
Not really.
That's what I thought.
He did a couple of solo album tributes to Buddy Rich, where he got other drummers as well as himself to come in and play on Buddy Rich songs, and those were really good albums. I mean, that was the because he did have some basis in jazz, you know, in addition to rock drumming. So that showed a whole different side of Neil Peart. Smaller drum kits, different kind of drumming, more economical drumming, but in terms of technique, just as good.
Well, you said that there's a big outpouring. Everybody loved him. Great drummer. What drummer out there are people going to be glad when he's dead?
Glad when he's dead?
Because he sucks so much on the drums. God,
oh,
that guy was
boy.
Terrible I mean, back there.
Yeah, that's a hard one to call. I mean, you had like, you certainly had that ambivalence when Ginger Baker passed away because he was such a miserable human being.
But Chuck Berry kind of comes to mind,
too. Tremendous drummer.
But not, I was going to say, but Ginger Baker was a talented drummer. He was
right.
Just a miserable human being.
Well, listen, if they're bad drummers, you're not hearing about them.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, even in the groups we'd think would be go-to groups, like, I don't know, Rat and Twisted Sister, you know, those guys are good drummers.
All right.
You're not going to get to a level that some you know who they are if they're not any good.
Hall of Fame inductees.
Yeah, this is the, you know, certainly the most interesting, most diverse, and most polarizing.
What a mess.
It is a mess. I mean, we talked about this, of course. I mean, Whitney Houston, Notorious B.I.G., No Way, No How. Do they belong anywhere close to anything that has the term rock and roll in it. You know, certain rap does. Run DMC, Beastie mm-hmm. Boys, Public Enemy, you can make a case for those. NWA being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because there's a strong rock and roll component to what they do, and there really isn't with Notorious B.I.G. Whitney Houston, no. I mean, no way, shape, or form.
With that reaction, I'm guessing you get a ballot, right?
I do get a ballot,
and I'm guessing
vote for either one of them.
You didn't vote for Whitney Houston.
Now, the other problem the Rock Hall is having is of that public ballot that we spoke about last week and before, only one of those top five from the public ballot, the Doobie Brothers, made it into the Rock Hall this time, and that, you know, that's a bad message to send to the public. That, you know, why should the public vote if it doesn't seem to have an impact? And they do tell you up front, look, the public vote is just going to count as one ballot. So the votes of whatever, you know, a billion, however many people voted, all of them count as much as my ballot does.
Right, but those are the people they want to come and
visit
the Rock
and Roll Hall of Fame. Well, you want to invest people, you know, you want them to care about it. So,
Pat Benatar, Soundgarden, Judas Priest.
Dave Matthews Band.
The
top vote getter.
Rock and roll fits when you talk about them, correct? Rock
and
roll.
Right. Hall and the others. And think about the others who didn't make the cut, who were nominees. Judas Priest, Motorhead, Todd Rundgren, Thin Lizzy, Kraftwerk, even for that matter. The poor MC5, which is rapidly becoming the Susan Lucci of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mean, it really is. I think they've got a problem here.
All right, because I want the people's voice to be heard. An email comes in from Kevin from Brookfield, and this guy, I'll just ask his question. With the recent announcement of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and inductees and the subsequent backlash, and it seems like there is one.
Oh, yeah.
Does Gary think we'll ever change the Hall of Fame voting and make it become more transparent?
No.
Like the baseball Hall of Fame, he says.
I honestly don't. I mean, you know, if I were running the world here, as I should, what I would do with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is say the winner of the public vote gets in every year. Then
the
you,
top band of the winners of the public's vote? Or?
The top band.
Okay.
Then you establish kind of like the equivalent of the Baseball Hall of Fame Old Timers Committee. And that committee brings one in. So that's a committee that would take a look at the real overlooked, you know, mostly older artists like a Mitch Ryder or an MC5 or, you know, as we're getting into it, you know, there are other bands from the 60s and 70s that have been eligible for a long time but are not getting in. So let that committee pick one. That gives you two. Then the voting body, the 1,000 or so who gets ballots, they get the other four. And that way you have, you know, you're serving the public, you're taking a good look at who's been left out and deserves to be in, you know, Procol Harum, Steppenwolf, Spirit, there's a bunch of them. And then you're still giving the voting body its chance. So that would be my model for fixing it.
So of those who didn't get in, of the list that you and Brian just went over, who would you consider the biggest snub?
Probably Judas Priest.
Okay.
Well, no, Pat Benatar.
That was my pick, but I wanted to know yours.
And then Judas Priest. But you know what? From a qualitative standpoint, you know, a critical, more of an academic standpoint, Todd freaking Rundgren. I mean, this is a guy who made great rock music, was an innovator in terms of studio and live technology, and in addition to his own music, produced giant albums for Meatloaf and Grand Funk and quite a few others. So, you know, that he's still sitting
on the bench. And a Packer touchdown wouldn't be the same without him.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So, it's going to be interesting. The other, another interesting facet of this class is half of it's dead.
Of the people.
T-Rex, three of the four guys are dead. Whitney Houston's dead. Notorious B.I.G.'s dead. That's the biggest class of deceased people since 1987.
Wow.
The Rock Hall. So I did have a conversation with Greg Harris, who's the president and CEO, about, so how do you do this? And he puts the right spin on it that, well, it's an opportunity. And, yeah, an opportunity to pay tribute to them, much like they did with Linda Ronstadt when you had Bonnie Raitt, Emmylou Harris, Stevie Nicks, Sheryl Crow, Carrie Underwood sing for her. Or I remember Sarah Bareilles singing for Laura Nyro, Kid Rock, and I forget who else did the Beastie Boys. So
I think if you're going to have somebody cover Linda Ronstadt songs, I think they did it right at the was it the President's Awards when she went in?
Oh, the Kennedy Center.
The Kennedy Center Awards,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Man, Trisha Yearwood nailed
oh, yeah.
it. She really sounds like Linda Ronstadt when she does her songs.
Oh yeah. So it is an opportunity, though. You know, it is an opportunity to do some cool things. I mean, you know, all the artists who were influenced by T-Rex, they ought to be able to put out a bang up performance.
Will we ever have a year where there is a class voted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame where everybody's happy? Because every year we go through this, like, what? How did
yeah.
they? Yeah, we do
and
that.
No, we won't. But that's to the hall's benefit.
That sort of, you know, ensures that it'll continue on for the next year.
No, you want people to talk about you. You want a degree of controversy. You know, so that keeps people talking about you. But this year's class, this is genuine backlash. I mean, you really are feeling the disappointment and the disillusion, and that's not a place you want to get to.
All right, what's the bigger deal, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or the Songwriters Hall of Fame?
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but the Songwriters Hall of Fame is, for those people, is a very cool honor because this is voted on by and for songwriters. I mean, there's no press component, there's no media component, there's no public vote. These are songwriters voting for songwriters, and every year they seem to have a great class, and you rarely hear that there's a that there's somebody who shouldn't be in. So the 2020 class will be Steve Miller, the Eurythmics, Mariah Carey, the Isley Brothers, the Neptunes, which are Chad Hugo and Pharrell, Rick Knowles, and Mickey Stevenson from Motown. And they'll be inducted. You know, the Rock Hall does the beginning of May. The Songwriters Hall of Fame is June 11th.
And what's the criteria for getting on the ballot?
Just being a great songwriter, you know, having a body of work as a songwriter that they can point to.
All right. So I'm trying to think of Jimmy Webb is the most obscure one I can think of, but he's not obscure anymore. Everybody knows who Jimmy Webb is.
Oh, yeah. No, I think people, you know, kind of know. I mean, yeah, there are lots of names in there. I mean, not the mass public does not know Mickey Stevenson or Rick Knowles, but if I started listing off the songs they did, you'd be very impressed.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So, no, the Songwriters Hall of Fame tends to get it right, but it's smaller. You know, it doesn't have a TV show attached to it. It doesn't have a museum. It doesn't even have a bricks-and-mortar museum. So, it's just a smaller, leaner, and more credible operation.
Where do we keep the list? In a mall?
Online.
Some kiosk?
Online. They've talked about a museum, you know, and one day they probably will. Yeah, songwriters just aren't as sexy as rock and roll is. So it's easier to do a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and museum than it is a songwriter's.
More memorabilia. Songwriters.
Yeah, I mean, songwriter. Well, you got a lot of pens, typewriters, paper.
Right.
You could have, like, the Jacket Bird Bacharach War or something like that.
Oh, here, I'm going to nominate somebody for the Songwriters Hall of Fame. You tell me yes or no.
Okay.
The Warren Brothers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not immediately, but down the line. There's a body of work there I think you can say is really good.
All right. It's award season. We have the Oscar music nominees.
Right, and Elton John, because he's on the list three times. Of course, the one that won the Golden Globes, I'm Gonna Love Me Again, from the Rocket Man film, is probably the top contender. But there's also two from the live-action Lion King. Two new songs that Elton John and Tim Rice did for the movie, those are also in the category. So it really is. I'm pretty confident Elton's going to get an Oscar.
He already has one, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
He's got Oscars, right.
Yeah, for Can You Feel the Love Tonight.
Yeah, for The Lion King.
Right.
Which, man, that thing, what a money maker that is for Disney. That thing is either on tour or they redo it or it's on Broadway.
Oh, yeah, they're doing the same thing with Beauty and the Beast, and they will with The Little Mermaid. You know, that live action film's coming this year. They've just got the machine cranked up, and it's going to be Star Wars.
The live action Little Mermaid, that's going to be tricky.
Or they stick the thing on ice somewhere, you know?
Yeah, like I say, Star Wars on ice now that they own that, you know. John Williams, by the way, is nominated for the new Star Wars score. That is his 52nd nomination, breaking a record set by John Williams.
So, that Star Wars and Jaws served him well, right?
Star Wars, Jaws, Close Encounters.
Oh, right.
Close in the Raiders of the Lost Ark films. You know, being having being Steven Spielberg's go-to composer.
He has movie scored our lives, hasn't he?
Oh yeah, no, he is. He is up there. You know, when you talk about the impact, this is a modern, you know, counterpart of Bach or Beethoven or Chopin.
Speaking of movies and themes, Billie Eilish will sing the next James Bond.
Yeah, she's going to be the Bond theme will be done by a Bond girl.
Do you like it?
Become a Bond girl by doing it. You know, this is not unusual for James Bond. She's a little newer than some of the other Bond theme people have been.
Yeah.
But they try to find somebody who's current. You know, you think about Duran Duran and Adele have done themes, Jack White and Beyonce. So
yeah, they're usually within a decade.
Right, so Billie Eilish has the new one, No Time to Die, that's coming out April 10th.
And that's a Daniel Craig James Bond, too, which I thought he was done with those, but apparently not, because the check still came.
Yeah, no, supposedly this is the last Daniel Craig
well,
James
that's
Bond.
The last three have been now.
I was going to say, until the next last Daniel Craig James Bond film.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, you can't do Knives Out forever.
Well, they're talking about that as a franchise now.
Really?
Yeah, they're basically using his character from Knives Out because it's based on a book series. So they'll do they can do different adventures with this, you know, detective. And he was great in that movie. So what a great character to perpetuate a little bit.
James Bond might be the only character who is portrayed by two different people at the same time.
Right.
For a while,
Sean Connery and Roger Moore. I can't remember two Iron Man.
No, there hasn't been any of that yet. Spider-Man came close but did not overlap.
Yeah.
Here's something I'd like to have in my collection. I mean, there's a lot of cool stuff that they auction off, guitars and things like that, a jacket, a shirt. But how would you like to have the lyrics to While My Guitar Gently Weeps?
That would be very cool. I mean,
how is this up for auction and where'd it come from?
Somebody had it. You know, they're not necessarily saying who, but it was basically, and another cool thing about it is it was scrawled on the back of a studio recording sheet by both George Harrison and Ringo Starr during the White Album session.
All right, where does that song rank in Beatles song positions?
As a song, it's top 20. As a recording, I would say top 10. You know, because it's a great arrangement composition. You've got Eric Clapton playing guitar on it.
Yeah.
So I definitely think it's you know, probably in the top tens of the recording.
Depending on the day of the week, it could actually be my number one Beatles song.
I think it is for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, it's had a great life out there. You know, a lot of people have recorded it. And, of course, you know, Prince's version of it, or Prince joining the All-Star version of it at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 94.
And if you're Lennon and McCartney, they have to be going, wait, we wrote 88% of the music, and that's your favorite Beatles song?
Well,
it's
but,
really good.
You know, it happens. I mean, you know, if you think about, you know, George Harris, sometimes doing less lets you do more.
I think it's better than Penny Lane or A Day in the Life.
I'd be okay with that. I could definitely go with that.
Meatloaf falls off a stage. This was a while ago.
Not off a stage. He fell in a hotel.
Oh, wait. Okay, go ahead. Maybe
you know,
I had this wrong.
Hotel in Dallas, where he the Fort Worth International Dallas Fort Worth International Airport, where he was at the Texas Frightmare weekend, and yes, you're right, he did fall off a podium.
Okay,
that he was where he was signing and talking and all that. That was during the Texas Frightmare last year, and then it put him in the hospital for 42 days.
Wow,
and he hasn't performed since, and supposedly has you know having to gone. Undergo extensive physical therapy, so he's suing this hotel. They haven't attached an amount to it yet, but he's seeking reparations.
What was the injury? A wrenched back or torn knee? Or
oh yeah, no, he did a real job on himself. Let's see, severe neck, collarbone, and shoulder injuries are what the suit says.
He was in rough health before this, though, right? I mean, he's old.
He was. They're going to come back and say it's his own fault, you know. Or his handler's fault. You know, they'll settle out of court.
I would.
Oh, I'm sure they will.
That's what I'd say if I were the hotel.
For both. I don't think there will be enough of an award on either side to merit the legal fees that would go with it.
Really? Wow. All
so
right.
We have an Eddie Money tribute concert coming?
We do have an Eddie Money tribute concert coming. This is going to be held I have to find the details for us, but this is going to be held in Los Angeles. And let's see, I'll find it for us in a minute, but, you know, Eddie obviously passed away this past fall, and was, you know, that was talk about an out. There was a, you know, really strong outpouring there, you know, for Eddie.
It happened quickly when Eddie went. It was like we knew he wasn't well.
Right.
The announcement came that he was in treatment. Then the next thing you knew was like Eddie Money has passed away.
Yeah, and there was a note. You know, we kind of got a note that it was imminent, and then literally within minutes, it came out, you know, that he had, passed away, which was very, very sad. But this is going to be taking place. Pulling the date up here for you.
And while you're looking that up, I'll point out, too, that other cool stuff that will be available here shortly, if you don't like lyrics. How'd you like Don Springsteen's old motorcycle?
Harley-Davidson?
Yeah, you pull up on that thing and you go, yeah, one other owner, Bruce Springsteen. I have it now.
Yeah, no, Bruce is going to, you know, he auctioned this off for the Special Olympics. You know, his daughter Jessica is an Olympic equestrian. So, and he's also auctioning off one of his guitars. This is for the Olympic and Paralympic Games that are going to take place 2020 in Tokyo. I don't think Jessica made the cut for the team, but they still, you know, they're still very supportive.
Who's
the Springsteen?
The mom of these kids?
Eddie Spielfa.
It is?
Yeah.
Not Julianne.
He didn't have any kids with her.
Well, yeah. He must have been 45 or 50 when they were born.
You can't find that. Who was his first wife? Julianne Phillips?
Yeah.
Julianne Phillips was the first wife.
You can't find her anywhere.
Not anymore. She kind of dropped off.
Yeah.
She probably don't see her.
Fletch movie either. Or two, I think.
Yeah.
She hasn't been seen in.
No, just kind of.
That happens to a lot of people who are seen once or twice and then.
Well, that's, you know, it's not like she had a huge movie career. You know, she had a couple of good things, but.
No, she did Sisters on NBC. That was her zenith. And Springsteen's son's a firefighter.
Yeah, he showed up at the, you know, at the swearing in for his son, Sam. His youngest son has been a firefighter for a while. So he just got sworn in at the Jersey City firefighter crew. And Springsteen and his wife, the whole family showed up for that.
Very nice.
All right.
Which was nice. And then on the Eddie Money front, February 20th in Beverly Hills, Sammy Hagar, Rick Springfield, George Thorogood, John Waite, Vicky Thomas. There will be some others, and it's going to benefit Music Cares.
All right.
Okay.
We're out of time, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
All right. We will talk next week.
All right. Talk to you then. Gary Graff, our music expert. You get him on Friday mornings.